One of the things that happens to us all the time is that we get distracted by what's going on in the world. And we don't have a refuge within us. So it's appealing to be busy with what's going on in the world or what's external. The world is not peaceful in a way, but in another way, you could say there are more and more people that are learning how to meditate and trying to clear their minds or trying to look for something beautiful or something better. It's just that we live at a time when there's more information available and we know more about what people do. And maybe in previous times, people had their own little family farm. I mean, you could make it idyllic, and it's not true. You roll back the clock, and the world was pretty messy. It always has been. We just have more exotic ways of messing up. And if we take care of the mind, and it's true, the mess begins here. There could be a fire or a disaster, and there are many ways to respond to that. And if you know how to put out the fire, then you can control. But what if we lose control? This is where it becomes dangerous. The lack of control is also very frightening for us. And we notice when we lack control of the body, how much the mind becomes fractured and frightened very quickly. It doesn't have to start from something happening in the world, but just something happening privately for us. I remember when I was living in England, one of the women that was a nun there, her mother took very ill. She had cancer. And I happened to go with her to visit her mother. And it was just a few days before she died. And she was watching the news because there were terrible things going on in South Africa. She was sitting in bed with the TV on, watching what was happening in the news. But she was dying of cancer. And I remember feeling the contradiction there. Here's somebody that's really on the edge of being alive, and yet her mind was caught up with the situation in her home country, a situation over which she had no control and really was far away from. But it mattered more to her than being attentive to her own physical process. And her mind was very distracted in that. I was so surprised. And I wondered, when it comes to my time, am I going to be looking at what's happening in the world? Or am I going to try to focus on the news of the present moment, here, in this body-mind? So these habits of paying attention to worldly events and worldly troubles and conditions that we cannot change are not the solution. Because the peace and the ending of trouble begins with us here. And if we can do that, if we can bring the mind to stillness within us, then the world could continue in the mess that it's in, or our interpretation of the mess, or pick a corner of the world where things look absolutely what we think is perfect. That's not going to help us be at peace with what we have to face. So we really have to be wise to that extent, and it's what you said in the beginning, why are the boundaries becoming so loose? and that people are choosing to do things that are foolish, that will never change in this human realm. There will always be people that do the right thing and people that don't. I think what we can actually do in our own life is choose well and learn how to still the mind and bring it to wholesomeness, to peace, to purity here in our own situation, whatever it is. That's enough of a challenge. And if the world continues to disturb us, then we have not resolved that internal lack of peace, because we're so disturbed and perturbed and set off balance by external conditions. So I think we have to strengthen ourselves to be able to be patient with external conditions more and more, and to realize how much the externals affect the mind. I notice with the weakening of certain conditions in the body, how much it affects the peace of the mind. It's here, it's not out there. So everything around, you know, the monastery could be running perfectly well, lots of people here, the work is being done, the world is at peace, everything else, but we still have to face old age, sickness, death. What will be the condition of the mind in those phases, like the phases of the moon? Is the mind going to be eclipsed? Is the heartness, the purity, the ray of the absolute, is that going to shine within us when we get sick? Or will we realize that these are just coming and going, they're arising and ceasing conditions that have nothing to do with the truth of our perfect nature, which is unconditioned, which does not stop the brilliance, the brightness that we carry. No matter what's going on in the world, that doesn't end. But if we become obsessed or concerned or believe that our attention to that is somehow going to bring us happiness or help our condition, it won't. As we can see, it quite obviously disturbs the mind that believes in those conditions as true and real. And they are true and real on one level, but not on the level of ultimate reality. And we have a relationship with ultimate reality, but we may not be aware of it because we're living surrounded by conditioned reality, which is always changing. And we mistake it for what is true. It's just like in one of the Jataka tales, there's the example of the king when one of his subjects came to him and told him about this precious gem that he could see in this pond. And so when the king heard about it, he thought, well, he was going to go and get that gem. So the man told him where the gem was based on where he had seen the reflection of it or the shining of it. And the king ordered his attendants to empty the pond. They searched the pond to the extent that they took all the water out and even searched through all the mud in the pond, and they could not find this gem. So he thought, this man is lying to me. And the man said, no, 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 there was a gem. Then he called on a great sage, Mao Sada, I think his name was. And this sage, who had some Dhamma practice in him, he said that he thought that the gem was in the nest of a crow above the lake. So sure enough, they looked at the crow's nest and there was a gem, because the crow had stolen it from somewhere and put it in its nest. And Everyone believed that the gem was in the pond because of the reflection. So when consciousness presents the world to us, we believe that that world is real because we see that in our conscious awareness through forms, through feelings, through perceptions, through what the mind creates, and through appearances in consciousness itself. But when consciousness is not pure, what we're seeing, we believe that, but it's a reflection. It isn't a reflection of ultimate reality. It's a reflection of conditioned reality. But beyond that, there is something greater that we're not able to see. And we believe that we also, this body, these forms, these feelings that we have, these interactions, relationships, that all this presents to us a sense of being someone, a solid being who goes through life and has all this knowledge and then creates a reality around that, and we are totally identified with that without realizing it's just a reflection of what we truly are. It's just like the precious gem the king heard about that the man could see in this pond. That was just a reflection of the gem in the crow's nest. And if we stop looking at reflections and we start seeing the mind itself or the heart itself, or seeing in a way that we can know consciousness for what it is, that pure awareness for what it is, then we stop believing in that self, that I am this, that this is an I, a me, and a mind that owns, that has ownership, that is solid, that is identified, has a role to play, and it's impermanent. And it's full of suffering, that we have no control at all. We only believe we have control. But all these are based on the wrong assumption of a solid being and the mistaken belief that this is who we are. We don't actually know who we are. But we can know who we are. And it is by searching more deeply, by investigating the forms. It's from investigating the forms and their ultimate qualities, their true characteristics, that we begin to see that which is formless. We begin to see the emptiness of that, of these conditioned forms. But we also see the suffering in attaching to them and believing in them. So the reason for our investigation is to find the gem, to know the truth, that the gem is the truth, instead of living in untruth and being upset by conditions that cannot change, that cannot stop changing, in other words. We cannot make them into something else. We cannot make them change less to please our ego or our desire for stability, security, because it's a world that is insecure. That's the nature of it. It's a world of birth, aging, and sickness and death. Every form that we see dies. Even this building is a dying thing. Maybe not in this life, but the house we live in is, it leans, and it's been around for a long time, but it's not in a great shape. So we keep trying to prop things up to make them look good and last forever. The illusion is created. Break through the illusion. So when we sit down to meditate, how do we get hold of all this? How do we find all this out? It's tricky because the deluded mind is always interrupting. It's always presenting something new for us to look at. But if we're able to bring the mind to a greater and greater depth of silence, then we get a little glimmer of something else, something that's deeply nourishing and nearing that which is absolutely true. And it's not outside of us. It's not by the world, making the world better. Of course, we want there to be an ending to suffering for people, for ourselves, for everyone. We want peace. We want ethical foundations to be respected. We want young people to behave because they're so errant. They're truant. They're off doing these terrible things and messing up the world. But that's just appearances. The world is just full of greed, hatred, and delusion. But the ending of greed, the ending of hatred, and the ending of delusion can be found here within us. And that's perhaps the most sacred gem that we could find. It is not in the world. It's in the heart. And we have to, the quieting of the mental formations, the bringing all of that mental movement to a still point will be our greatest asset in discovering that shining, that luminosity. It's really within us. Even if we can shine it for a moment, like people were so excited to see the sun hiding behind the moon for a moment. It was just an exhilarating experience. But even more exhilarating than that is to see the mind removing or moving away from the shadow of its delusion, from the eclipse of our delusion. When the mind reveals itself, or the heart is revealed in its total purity, that would be the most exhilarating moment for us. That's why we sit silently. And the way that we sit is important. It's not about the perfect posture. Anyone can do that. You know, I remember walking into many a retreat center and seeing rows of people sitting up very straight and being inspired. Oh, the silence is very, very beautiful. People striving to witness, to bear witness to that reality within themselves. But very often we pick up the project with a lot of ego and a lot of striving. I'm going to get the gem, just like the king. And you empty out the lake, and you pull out all the mud, and you think you're going to see the gem, when actually you're looking right at it, but it's reflected in a way that you don't see it, because it's coming through this wanting, the striving for, which is based on willpower. But it comes more from the power of love, unconditional love that is resting in the present moment with things just exactly as they are, not interfering in any way, but bearing witness to the truth of what we are in the present moment. Just that bearing witness to reality itself within us. And the mind is silent, then the Dhamma arises here in the heart. And it just speaks, it manifests to us. So we have to purify and purify and be so ready to receive the power of that. So it's just getting ready, because it's there. Ready to see, ready to know, ready to taste what is already within us. And to trust that. It's a heightened faith. Not a blind faith, but a faith that knows that this is possible. There are beings that have been able to accomplish this, and the Buddha was such a being, fully awakened. And he only points us to that possibility. He was not a servant of the king. He did not follow royalty. In fact, his father was a king, and he rejected that whole line of work. But he did perhaps the greatest work that a human being could accomplish by understanding his heart, his being fully, his beingness, that godness, that divinity residing within him, abiding in that. Because there's nothing solid there at all. There is no essence that we can actually experience through the senses. It's an intuitive knowing. We cannot see, hear, smell, taste, touch, or think of that. It's unthinkable, an indescribable reality. But it can be known by the purity of our awareness in one moment.